Jean Payne, President, Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association.
All right, Jean, we've had another year of the dicamba product use and reports of weed control, of course, but also of drift damage. And your organization has come up with some recommendations moving forward. As we all know, the EPA will decide on registration for 2019, and I believe the deadline is in November. But what are the biggest concerns that you guys have about the product moving forward, and what do you want to see in terms of what the EPA does?
So our organization really represents all factors of the pesticide and the fertilizer industry in Illinois. So the retailers who apply the products, but also the manufacturers and distributors are members as well. So we really have the whole supply chain. So our focus has been to try to understand it throughout from the registrant's perspective, the people who make the product, and also the retailers who have to service it to the farmers. And we have over 70% of the fields that were sprayed in Illinois with dicamba were done by professional applicators, which are the ag retailers. So our goal has always been to maintain a good use of this product in the post-soybean marketplace, because we have had the weed pressures in Illinois, and we're a large soybean producing state, and we're a challenging state in terms of pesticide application because we often have extremely windy conditions, especially through central Illinois, where some of our big, prime soybean production acres are. So our goal all along has been to help define a method to use this product effectively by figuring out what the challenges were that the retailers have observed in their second year now of using the product.
And what have they observed?
So we, after the first year in 2017, just the phone calls that I was getting at the office with observations from the retailers prompted us to survey our members so they could kind of be anonymous, but also thoughtful in what they shared with us. And we did that again in 2018. And it really enables us to sort of pinpoint what the commonalities were and then also what some of their recommendations were. So in 2017, we saw some off-target symptomology, especially in sensitive soybeans. And I think that's been the most perplexing thing about this is that up until now, we've always been so concerned as an industry with impacts on other non-target crops like gardens, specialty crops, pumpkins that we grow a lot of in Illinois, nurseries, organic products, things like that. The challenge with this product has been the impact has been so evident in sensitive soybeans. And, of course, we have a lot of other sensitive soybeans out there, including the Liberty Link brands and the regular Roundup Readies and the organic soybeans. So most of the issues that we noted in 2017 and then again in 2018 were the symptoms in the sensitive soybeans, even when the retailers felt like they were blessed this year with some very good, early, timely, within label, especially on the wind conditions for application. And I think a lot of them were disappointed to see that symptomology after they really felt that they had an excellent time to apply the product.
All right. So given that, what are the recommendations then for the product moving forward from your organization?
So we also know, too, that US EPA was going to renew this label for 2019 or think about renewing it. And so I think the reasons that we've tried to be very proactive, Julie, is that there is, the common adage of three strikes, you're out. And we know that there are no really new herbicide chemistries coming into the marketplace in the foreseeable future. So dicamba in managing weeds post-application becomes a very important thing for it to be successful. So knowing that, we also realize that in 2019, there's still going to be a lot of Liberty Link growers who are going to have sensitive soybeans, and a lot of organic soybeans and other crops are still going to be out there in 2019. So our recommendations in looking at what we observed for 2 years of product use was that, number one, we still believe that the earlier the better, and there seemed to be some confusion about R1 and R2, and is it one flower, is it three flowers, or should we talk about moving it to an earlier growth stage, and also that would then promote better recognition of the trifoliate stage and then also earlier in the season. But I think the most significant thing we recommended was that there currently is, if there's a sensitive crop downwind, it says do not spray. And we have a lot of shifting winds in Illinois. It might be a westerly wind when you start. It might be a southwesterly wind halfway through your application. And it might be a south or northwesterly wind by the time you finish. And when you've got a full sprayer in the field, people don't understand that it's really not tangible to be able to stop and with every little wind shift, but that's what the label requires. So we felt as an organization that in order to truly protect the sensitive crops, that there should be, if there's an adjacent sensitive crop, no matter what side of the field it's on and no matter what direction the wind is blowing, it should be a do not apply. And that would also send a message to everybody in the supply chain that would be better to communicate exactly what is planted. If your field, if you as a farmer want your field applied by a professional applicator, you really need to tell that applicator what's planted on all four sides, because we're never going to know which way the wind is going to blow, especially if things get compressed and everybody wants their field sprayed on the same day. So that was our attempt to truly represent a feeling that we want to protect the sensitive soybean crops. We saw damage even when the winds weren't necessarily blowing towards them. And so in an effort to do that and an effort to better identify what's planted out there, that was the recommendation, is to do not spray when there's sensitive soybeans adjacent to the field of application on any side.
Okay.
And then finally, our recommendation was to consider a cutoff date, because, you know, we saw, unfortunately, although the majority of the commercial applicators finished by the second week of June or the third week of June, we still had incidences of dicamba being applied well into July and in some cases even into August, Julie. And that just becomes something that makes us concerned for the long-term viability of this product, because anybody who's reading your article today who's used dicamba for 30 years knows it was just never a product that was ever used in the summertime, and there was a reason for that. And so we felt that to give the states some ability to sort of draw a clear line of delineation when it comes to enforcement and to force people to be good stewards of this, that we would consider in Illinois a cutoff date of June 30th that would still give us flexibility on replants. But in reality, even when we have to replant soybeans, by June 30th, your soybeans are up and in a post-emerge condition. And so we threw that date out for Illinois, but recognize other states might have other cutoff dates. And then the final thing we suggested was the V6 growth stage, to move the application up earlier in the year.
Okay. As you probably know, Missouri had a state label last year, well, for this year, mm-hmm. that required some cutoff dates, two separate ones,
yes.
I believe, in June, and then there was one in July. But why didn't Illinois do that last year? And then who makes that decision?
Right. So Illinois has always been a state that has had a very, and when I say Illinois, I mean the industry, as well as our Department of Agriculture, has always had a lot of respect for the federal labels. And we've always tried to not go down a path of putting a lot of additional restrictions on top of the federal label, because it becomes very confusing for many of our members who apply, not just in Illinois, but in Indiana or Missouri or Wisconsin. And so we wanted to really give that opportunity for the federal label to work. Whether it did or not, I guess it could be up for debate. But I think going into this year, I think there's, now that Illinois has had a second year of experience with this, and it didn't exactly, from the terms of the farmers who still had a lot of concerns about symptomology, didn't exactly hit our goal of having fewer complaints than 2017. So we would much prefer that US EPA set a standard for stewardship and that it can be uniform across state lines. Having said that, we certainly don't disregard the needs of states to do something additional based on their state experience. And we may or may not see that in Illinois. It really depends on what the federal label says.
Okay. In terms of your letter to the EPA about what you want to see on the federal level, do you have a similar plea with the Department of Agriculture in terms of what they might do as a separate state label, or are you just waiting to see what the response is from EPA?
We have a really close relationship with the Department of Ag that our association always has, not just on pesticides, but fertilizers and weights and measures, truck scales, everything to do with the the business of agriculture in Illinois. So we stayed in weekly contact with them throughout this issue of the growing number of complaints and investigations and the things that farmers were telling the Department of Ag. And so they were supportive of us making recommendations on behalf of the industry. I think they will take that under advisement. I do think that our Illinois Department of Ag is in a situation, Julie, where our state budget issues do not enable them to hire additional people to do this incredible number of investigations, because when there is a complaint called to the Department of Ag, they have to investigate every single one. And it isn't just going out and making one visit. It's often making two or three visits, documenting, reporting, record keeping, review by legal counsel, determination of what's a violation and what isn't. I mean, it takes an incredible amount of resources. And we're very concerned that if we can't find a way to draw back the number of farmers who feel like their crops have been damaged, that this will continue to strain our Illinois Department of Ag and take resources away from other very important programs, including the facility inspections and the worker protection standards and the pesticide repackaging and containment regulations and the licensing and permitting for our other things that we do in agriculture. So I think that Illinois Department of Ag, I can't speak for them. Like I said, they'd like to see US EPA address this so that we wouldn't have to try to do additional state restrictions. But, you know, Illinois has that opportunity to do that, and I think they'll work very closely with the industry depending on what the US EPA label comes out saying.
Okay, and I can check with the Ag Department as well, but yes. I know, you know, in Missouri, there is the department acknowledges that there is a backlog in Missouri for dicamba damage investigations on, would you say that's your knowledge of what's happening in Illinois as well?
Yes. Yeah. I think their goal at the department is to get all these investigations done before the end of the calendar year. And you have to understand, this is another thing that's very troubling for the applicators, the commercial applicators especially, whose livelihood depends on their ability to have a license to apply pesticides, not just dicamba, but other crop protection products. So if you don't find out until December if you violated the Illinois Pesticide Act and are facing penalties or accumulating sort of points against your license, you don't know where you stand as a professional applicator. And the fact that the Department of Ag is so backlogged means we may not find out until December. And so we really want to try to find a situation where they don't get as many complaints. In the history of the state of Illinois, on any given year when we apply 22 million acres, probably to three different crop protection applications, whether it's corn or soybeans, we've had a history of maybe 120 total complaints in any given year, with about 70 of those being ag-related and the other ones being lawn care-related. So to go from 125 total to over 500 this year and over 400 last year is a troubling trend for anybody in the pesticide industry. I don't care who you are. It's not a trend that you want to see. You don't want to go up. You always like to see those go down. And so that's, too, why our organization took that very seriously, because we realize what those trends mean to the public who scrutinizes our use of pesticides, and rightly so.
All right. I don't have any further questions, Jean, unless you wanted to add something.
Okay.
Did we do all right?
Well, I would like to see a label like any day now, Julie, so like you say, we know where to go next, because if we expect that the label will probably get renewed for use in soybeans, but will probably be annual training requirements again. And when you have upwards of 11,000 applicators in Illinois, an annual training requirement, no matter how you try to do it, is very, it's a big undertaking. And so the sooner we can get started, the better, especially if there's going to be label changes. So I think we're just really looking forward to seeing some decision as soon as we can.